Let's open our Bibles to Mark 11. We're going to be in Mark 11, 12 through 25 this morning. As you turn there, I want you to think with me. How many of you guys like pranks or you like pranking people? There's like, okay, you guys like pranking people? Okay. I am a prankster and I like to play with people's heads when it comes to pranking people. And now you're probably thinking, I'm supposed to believe what this guy has to say about the Bible now? How am I supposed to? No, but I play pranks. I'm not one that likes being pranked, though. As a pastor here and as a youth pastor, I get pranked quite a bit. Ben and I get pranked quite a bit. And I'm not a fan of getting pranked, but I love pranking people. And one of the things that you do when you prank people is you normally try to make someone believe that something is happening when in reality it's not that way. And I have a prank that I pulled on Ben. Is Ben here? Where is Ben? Is Pastor Ben in here? He may have run out. But there was this one story that deals with Pastor Ben and I, and it was one of my favorite all-time stories. When the youth group went to Japan, we have a couple teens that are here from that trip, but when the youth group went to Japan a few years ago, and when Pastor Dan was the youth pastor, Ben and I were just interns. So rewind the clock with me about two and a half years. Ben and I had just become interns. It was the summer, and the teens were raising money to go to Japan. And so one of the things they did was they would go to people's houses, and they would do work projects at the house or wherever they were. They would clean, they would paint, they would do all types of stuff at their house. And what they would do is, some of the teens are already laughing because they probably know what I'm about to say, but what they would do is they would do the work project at their house, and then if they did like a good job or whatever, you could give them funds to help them go to Japan. And so the one house we went to, there was a Saturday, and I had been an intern for probably a month at this time. I'd been coming to Caltab for hardly at any time at all, and I didn't know hardly anybody, and Pastor Dan was like, "You're going to come with us." So we went to Pete and Abby Garris's house. They had just bought this house, and they had the teens all spread out. I think how many teens went on that trip? Like 15 teens, something like that, 10, 15 teens. There was a good group of us there working, and they were renovating the inside of the house. They had teens cleaning the kitchen. They had teens cleaning up this area. They had moving boxes here, all this stuff. And I got placed on a project. I think you were with me, Matt. We were in the backyard. They had pieces of rebar, metal rebar, down in the ground. Were you with me? Okay. I think Noah Kiko was with me too. And so we're in the backyard, and some of these pieces of rebar were like 6 inches out. Some of them were a couple feet out. Some of them were just above the ground, an inch or so. And here comes Pastor Ben there as I'm telling the story. But anyway, so we start, and the whole goal was Pete came down and he said, "Can you guys pull these out?" And we're like, "Sure, of course." So they gave us some shovels, and one of them came out real easy, and that was the only one that came out easy. Some of them were down in there. And we found out later, Pete just told me this morning that there was some that were attached, he thinks, to cement, at the like way down in, and we had spent hours. So anyway, we're down there, and Pastor Ben comes down. He was doing some project, and he comes down. He asks us if we want some water. And I'm like, "That'd be really nice." And he sees me struggling to get this one stake out, and I can't get it out. He sees me, and he leaves, and as he leaves, I finally get it out. And it's probably about 3 feet long. And I sit down and I'm like, "Oh, that water would be really nice." Because it's hot summer day, right? We're doing this. And I'm just waiting for Ben to come back with my water. And then I had this idea. And I'm like, "I'm going to play a prank on Ben." So I decided to put the stake back in the ground, knowing he had seen us struggling to get them out. I shove the stake back in. I tamp a lot of dirt around it real quick, push it down in. And Pastor Ben comes out, and I don't think Matt saw me pull that stake out. He was not aware that I pulled the stake out. Pastor Ben comes down, and he hands me the water. I'm like, "Oh, thanks so much. I'm parched, you know, sweating, taking a drink." I'm like, "Ben, you're obviously stronger than me. You're stronger than me. You should give it a try." So Ben's like, he's doing this, he's stretching. He's like, "You know, I'm going to give it a big shot." He goes over there. And he's like, "Oh, it's wiggling." I'm like, "Okay, yeah, you could get it." All of a sudden, he like pulls it out of the ground, and he's like, has in his mind a sword in the stone moment. He's like, "I am the Hulk. I just pulled this thing." He drops it. The look on Matt's face is like, "We've been working on these for 30 minutes. You just came down here one tug." Ben starts flexing. He's walking around like this, like a big goon, like he is. I'm on the ground rolling. He has no idea. And I go, "You should try another one." He's like, "Okay." He goes over and he's on another one. He's pulling it. He's like, "I think I can feel it wiggling." I'm like, "Sure you can, buddy. It's moving. You're going to get it." But I was playing with his reality. He had no idea. I had completely fooled Pastor Ben. I've been dying for an opportunity to have a sermon to tell that story in, and I was so glad this text and everything goes with it. But I played with his reality. I played with what he thought was true. And when Jesus was here on earth, he had many interactions with people and things that tried to make Jesus think they were one thing or think they had it all together when in reality they didn't. And Jesus had tons of interactions with people. He interacted with nature. He calmed the sea just by saying, "Be still." He had interaction with animals, interaction with dead people who he then brought back to life. So we're going to look at three different interactions today. And in Mark 11, 12, 25 is some interactions where people or things try to fool Jesus, but he wasn't buying it. So read with me in your Bibles. Oh, if you can see up here, it says 1576 to 1577. That's not a year. Don't worry. It's not like a timeline. If you don't have a Bible, in the racks in front of you, there are Bibles. And so we encourage you, if you don't have one, you can grab one of those Bibles and take it home with you. That's our gift from us to you. You can have that. But those numbers up there are the page numbers that passage is on those Bibles. So as we read this, I want you guys to use your imagination. Put yourself there in the story. Put yourself like you're actually there, like you're one of the disciples maybe witnessing this happening. Use your imagination here with me. Let's go to Mark 11, 12 through 25. Follow along as I read. It says, "The next day as they were leaving Bethany, Jesus was hungry. Seeing in the distance a fig tree and leaf, he went to find out if it had any fruit. When he reached it, he found nothing but leaves because it was not the season for figs. Then he said to the tree, 'May no one ever eat fruit from you again.' And his disciples heard him say it. On reaching Jerusalem, Jesus entered the temple courts and began driving out those who were buying and selling there. He overturned the tables of the money changers and the benches of those selling doves, and would not allow anyone to carry merchandise throughout the temple courts. And as he taught them, he said, 'Is it not written, My house will be called a den of prayer, or a house of prayer for all nations, but you have made it a den of robbers.'" Verse 18, "The chief priests and the teachers of the law heard this and began looking for a way to kill him, for they feared him, because the whole crowd was amazed at his teaching. When evening came, Jesus and his disciples went out of the city. And in the morning, as they went along, they saw the fig tree withered from the roots. And Peter remembered, and he said to Jesus, 'Rabbi, look, the fig tree you cursed is withered.'" Verse 22, "Have faith in God," Jesus answered. "Truly I tell you, if anyone says to this mountain, 'Go throw yourself in the sea,' and does not doubt in their heart, but believes what they say will happen, it will be done for them. Therefore I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours. And when you stand praying, if you hold anything against anyone, forgive them, so that your Father in heaven may forgive your sins." Now, there's a lot going on in this passage. And when I first met with Pastor Rob to look at the preaching calendar and decide when I was going to preach, I picked this passage because I think it's a really, really powerful passage. But when you first read this passage, you're kind of confused at what's going on here. So I'm going to give you kind of my broken down version of what's happening. I'm going to try to put us there as best we can. I'm going to try to kind of open up our imaginations. So it starts right off in verse 12. It says that Jesus wakes up and he's going to go to the city. He's got an agenda for the day. Verse 11, if you go back and read verse 11, which we didn't touch on, but it says verse 11, he had gone into the city the night before and kind of had just seen some things and was like, okay, we'll come back the next day, and he left the city in verse 11. Verse 12, he wakes up and he knows, I got a lot of things I need to do. I'm on my way to the city. I have an agenda for the day. And right at the end of verse 12, we see it says that Jesus was hungry. Why in the world is that even important? Why is it important that we see Jesus is hungry? Some of you are thinking, now thanks, now that I realize I'm hungry, now that's going to be on my mind. It shows that Jesus is human. That's one of the small reasons they put that in there. Jesus was hungry. It helps us realize, yeah, he was human. It also shows us he's hungry, but he's putting off breakfast because he knows what he's about to go do in the temple is far more important than stopping and taking time to eat breakfast. Some of us are like that, where we just skip breakfast because we know we have to go get our kids around, or we have to get to work, or we have to do this or do that, so we skip breakfast. Obviously, research has showed us that breakfast is the most important meal. Jesus probably didn't have that detail then, but one of those things is Jesus completely just looking out, skipping out on breakfast because he knows he's on his way to the temple to do some important stuff. So they carry on their way, right? They get going, and as they're on their way, They're walking, and Jesus notices in the distance a fig tree. And as he sees this fig tree, we even see there's a small detail that says it wasn't the season for figs. Right? So this is what makes this story so confusing, because Jesus goes up to it, there's just leaves but no fruit, and it's not the season for figs, so why does Jesus curse this tree? So I did some digging, right? There's three phases to the way that a fig tree grows fruit, right? And this has helped me understand this a whole lot better. The way that a fig tree grows is, first, it will grow little nubs, little figs, right? But they're not fully grown figs, but they're edible. You can grab them off and then you can eat them. As the tree continues to grow in season, it will develop those into figs, and then the leaves will come. Then, once the fruit is all done, it will still have its leaves, and then it will shed its leaves like most trees. And this is no fig tree that Jesus is just walking off some dude's yard, and just, he's not stealing this, trying to steal this fruit. This would just be a fig tree that was off the road, just completely on the way to the city. And so when Jesus sees leaves, in that culture, there should have been fruit. There should have been at least little nubs, because it was the beginning of the season when they would be harvesting in a few months. So Jesus approaches, he's completely deceived. From a distance, it looks like there should be fruit, but as he gets closer, and as he gets where he can touch and feel and see, there's no fruit. So he gets angry that he's been deceived, he's been fooled, and he curses the tree. Imagine the disciples. They're probably like, man, Jesus, I know you're hungry, but what'd that tree ever do to you? You know, they must have been like, what's the big deal? Why are you cursing this tree? It's not even the season for figs. But Jesus knew it was about to go on. So they continue on their way, right? They go into the city, and all we know is right away, Jesus gets in the city, and it says he begins turning tables. He gets in there, and he's just like, boom, I'm going to flip tables. I'm going off. And this passage is one of the most misused passages in the Bible. People use this passage to justify unjust anger. We're not going to get into all this, but this is that passage where we see Jesus go in, and he sees the religious leaders allowing all this evil to take place, that who are taking a profit off of other people's worship, who are taking a profit unjustly. How many of you have ever been to an athletic event? And you go in there, like we went to a Mets game. We took a van to a Mets game a few summers ago, last summers, and a hot dog was like $5.50. The monopoly in some stadiums are huge. That's what's taking place here. People were selling animals when normally, like outside of the temple area, they could sell animals in the marketplace. And because Passover is happening in a few short days, people are there, they're taking advantage of this business, and the religious leaders are pocketing from this. The religious leaders are allowing them to be inside the temple courts. They're allowing them to be in there, and instead of charging a normal price, like 25 cents for a dove, they're upcharging like $4.50 to $5, because they're taking a profit from it too. And Jesus knows that. And so Jesus goes in, he starts going after this, and he starts sending people out. He's not even letting people carry things through the court. No livestock, no merchandise, everyone's out. And he tells them, what are you doing? This is a house of prayer. You made it a den of thieves. You've completely taken something that's supposed to have been holy and good, and you've turned it into something evil. And Jesus calls them out on their sin. He calls them out on their wrongdoing. He completely calls them out on the carpet. Right? Let's pause for a moment. Some of us wish we had this boldness. Some of us wish we had the type of boldness to look at people and be like, that's wrong, and I'm going to tell you about it. But that gets us burnt sometimes in Christian circles, right? We're afraid to approach our brothers and sisters when we see them doing something wrong. Not Jesus. Jesus called out unjust things when he saw it. Jesus called out wrong things when he saw it taking place. So Jesus gets them out of there, and he knows that this is wrong. And what happens? They begin to plot to kill him. They don't like that Jesus is calling them out for what they are. They don't like that Jesus is coming in their territory. This guy who's supposed to be the Messiah, he's coming in my temple? And he's going to tell me to do this? He's going to tell us to change all this stuff? Does he not know Passover is supposed to be coming up? Why in the world is he doing this to us? And so they fear him, so they decide to try to kill him. I've never hated someone so much that I've wanted to try to plot to kill them. that kind of gives you a sense that these people, something was off in their heads. They didn't like Jesus that much. They feared his teaching because the people listened and the people obeyed Jesus. They were losing their control. These people, as they get called out, completely change. I want to stop on one thought for a minute. As we think about Jesus going into the temple and going right at the hearts and the motives of the religious leaders, I want to think about this. If Jesus were to come into Caltab, first off, if he were to come in these double doors this morning, what do you think he'd change about our place of worship? What do you think he would change? Do you think he'd care about this drum set? Would he care that we still have an organ? Would he care that we have stained glass windows? Would he care that he didn't like we did video announcements? Would he care that we do the things the way that we do them if he were to come in our place of worship? Or do you think he'd want to have a conversation with Pastor Rob and myself and Ben and Doc, the leaders of our church? What do you think? Would Jesus come in and start flipping the welcome desk? Would he come in and not like that we have pews and that we should have chairs? We don't like the carpet? No. The only reason Jesus throws this fit is because he knows it's not so much what's going on, it's the motives of the people. It's the motives of the people in charge. And so as I had that thought this week, I stepped back and I was like, maybe we should have a conversation as staff to step back and say, where are our motives? Are our motives to truly glorify God at Caltab? Are we a church that's pursuing God and that this is a place where a house of prayer for all nations? Is Caltab a house where anybody can freely come with any type of sin they're dealing with? Sick, poor, dirty, nasty. Any type of person can come in here and pray? Or is this a place that Jesus would come in and say, you guys got this all wrong? I think Jesus would be okay with Caltab. I think he's pleased with some of the things we've done. I think the people who are in charge, I'm not talking about myself, the deacons and Pastor Rob, we truly do have a heart here at Caltab of trying our best to give everything we can and be everything we can to truly worship God. I had that thought this week, though. And that was something for me that it's not necessarily about how I'm doing it. Where's my heart? Where is my heart at? As we continue, the disciples and Jesus leave, right? They're done. He's had enough of the temple. He's ready to get out of there. He's probably getting ready to cool off. He's probably really hungry at this point anyway, but he decides he wants to cool off, so they leave. Nighttime comes, and the next day they're on their way out again. And as they're walking out, they run into the tree, that fig tree. And Peter, the disciple that was always opening his mouth, decides to be the one who reminds Jesus, like, hey, Jesus, remember that fig tree you cursed? Look, it's dead. It's not just dead, it's withered from the roots up. And Jesus is like, thanks, Peter. I'm glad you noticed, first of all. But he steps back, and in classic Jesus form, the rabbi that Peter calls him, the teacher he is, he takes advantage of the opportunity to teach an amazing example, amazing truth from all they had experienced in the last day and a half. He says, the first thing he says is, have faith in God. And he pauses. Now, we're going to pause too. What we're looking at in these two stories, Jesus and the fig tree and then the religious leaders in the temple, and then this story that Jesus is going to talk about with faith, is the comparison and the contrast really between fake faith with the religious leaders in the fig tree and real, genuine faith. Jesus says to Peter, have faith in God. And then he pauses and he goes, do you know what real faith looks like? Do you know what genuine faith looks like? If you really believe that I could do this, and you believed that God could work through you, say to that mountain, hey, go get in the ocean. Go do it. If you really had genuine faith and you didn't doubt, that mountain would get legs and walk and sit in the ocean. And the disciples must have been like, what? Imagine that. If we could go to a mountain, like there's a hillside over here, if we could go, hey, I want you to go get in the Susquehanna, and we had the type of faith that could do that. Let's pause on this thought. If you could do anything in the world, and all it took was faith to do it, all it took was faith. Other places in the Bible, Jesus says, you need the faith the size of a mustard seed to move mountains. If there's anything in the world you could do, anything at all, and all it took was faith, what would you do? Do you know? Do you have even faith the size of a mustard seed that could do that? But if there was anything in the world you could do, what was it? Or what would it be? Jesus tells him, let's look at the text one more time. It's in verse 22. He says, have faith in God. Truly I tell you, if anyone says to this mountain, go throw yourself into the sea, and does not doubt in their hearts, but believes that what they say will happen, it will be done for them. Therefore I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours. And when you stand praying, if you hold anything against anyone, forgive them, so that your Father in heaven may forgive your sins. If you could do anything and all it took was faith, what would it be? Now, I've not seen in my life, I've not seen God literally pick up a mountain and move it. But I've seen him move some spiritual mountains. I've seen him move, do some things in my life that were probably bigger than a mountain. Amen. I've seen him do some things in my life. I stepped back and I was like, whoa, that wasn't me. There's no way that could have been me. So what do we learn from these two stories? We see this fig tree with no fruit, and Jesus completely is just like, cursed, you're dead, I'll see you in a couple days. Goes to the temple, throws tables over, yells at the religious leaders, they plot to kill him. Then on the way back, he has this is what real faith looks like. Folks, today, do you have just leaves in your life? Are you like this fig tree and the religious leaders, where from a distance, from maybe here to the back of the room, when I look at you, or if Jesus were to be on stage and he were to look at you from a distance, if he were to look at you, would he say, oh, there's probably fruit in their life from a distance? But as he got closer, would he see fruit? As he got closer to your life, would he see the fruit of the Spirit? Would he see that you're loving people? Would he see that you're forgiving people, like the passage talks about? Would he see that you have genuine faith that drives you to action? Would he see that you have the faith that can move mountains? Or when he got close to you, would he see just leaves? I don't know about you guys. I have no idea about you. But it says Jesus curses the fig tree with no fruit. I don't want to be someone, when Jesus looks at me, I don't want to be cursed. When Jesus looks at me, I want him to see something that's genuine. I want him to see something that's real, that's really sold out for Jesus. That there's fruit so heavy on my branches that it's bending. Do you have just leaves in your life today? Or what's your faith to you? Is it just something, is your faith just something where you come to church and you put a little money in the offering plate and check, there's my faith for the week? Or is your faith in something else? Maybe you're here today and you were like me. Let me tell you about me. 5 years old, I said the sinner's prayer. Now, if you don't know what the sinner's prayer is, it's a prayer that normally is repeated after somebody. And you say something along the lines like this. You say, dear Lord, I know I'm a sinner. I know that I've sinned. Thank you so much for dying on the cross to forgive me of my sins. I love you. Thank you so much for doing that. Amen. That's like the very simplified version. When I was 5 years old, I'll never forget it. It was a leather couch in the pastor's office. The church was called Emmanuel Baptist Church. And there was some revival team there. I was five. And they had this plane crash thing. It was weird. But anyway, I remember feeling like so afraid that I was going to die and go to hell. And I didn't want to go to hell. And so I remember going in there, my dad leading me through the sinner's prayer. And I remember it was a leather couch because I was sobbing so much that when I picked my face up from the couch, it stuck to the leather. But it's one of those little details I'll never forget. And I believe that that was the moment that I got saved. Fast forward 12 years to when I was 17 years old. For 12 years, there was little to no fruit in my life to show for that prayer, to show for that faith. It was when I was 17 years old, I was working at a Christian camp in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and a guy by the name Jimmy Van Dyke came up, was preaching, and he said, basically called people who were fake out. And I was like, oh my goodness, that's me. I can quote John 3:16 forward and backwards. I can do all these things. I can tell you where to find this in the Bible. This is before Siri. I can tell you where to do this. I can tell you how to do this. I can dress like a Christian. I go to the church every time the doors are open. I'm there. This, and that. But when Jesus got close to my life, he said, Nate, there's no fruit on your branches. There's nothing to show that you are truly a follower of mine. And Jesus, the Holy Spirit, came into my heart and began to call me out for what I was. And he made an example of me right there. He said, look at this fig tree. Look at this Christian. Look at Nate. There's nothing on them. And I remember feeling so convicted. It was 17 years old. I can take you right to the spot where I decided I'm done. I'm completely done being fake. I'm sold out. What's the point? What is the point in life? To put on a mask, to put makeup on and completely make you believe I'm something I'm not. But so many of us do that. We go to work or we go to school or we're amongst friends or family. And we make them believe we've got our life all together. We make them believe we're this perfect Christian. Life's perfect. Jesus doesn't want us to pretend like we're perfect. Jesus is one of the most vulnerable people ever to live. He was around some of the scummiest people, as we would say probably, of the earth. And was constantly involved in their life. Vulnerable with people of all walks of life. Jesus says we'll be known by our fruit. Just like you know an apple tree from the apples, or an orange tree, or a fig tree. Why do we try to deceive Jesus the way that I fooled Ben with that steak? What is the point? Jesus isn't buying it, people. He goes right to the temple and goes, I ain't buying your little scam here. Sorry. So what do we take away from this? A lot of pastors, people who preach, preachers I should say, will try to come up with this funny literal alliterated point that you can take and grab and close. That's fine. I don't have that this week for you though. I have just two points. Two points that are practical from the passage. First one is this. Don't be fake. If you're taking notes, don't be fake. The world is looking for something genuine to grab onto. You've seen all these marches, right? The Women's March, even the March for Life. You've seen marches here in Binghamton that we had. There's all these things that are against the government, that it's the government's problem. People aren't looking for solutions in the government. People are looking for real, genuine hope. They're just taking their frustrations out on the government. People are looking for hope today. Real faith gives people hope. Because what Jesus did for me on the cross gives me the ability to get up every day, take a big deep breath and say, I don't care what you got, because my faith's bigger than the struggles of this world. That's genuine, people. When you show that real faith and people see it and they notice. Don't be fake. What's blocking your mind? What's keeping you from truly living out a life for God? Now, let's stop for a moment. When I say to you, don't be fake, some of you are just like, that's really rude. You don't know me. You don't know what I've been through. You don't know my life. You don't know who I am. You don't know who I work with. You don't know my wife. You don't know my husband. Yeah, I don't. But I know how easy it is to fake your faith. I know how easy it is to be fake, because I did it. And to be honest, I struggle with this, that I could pretend like it's all together. That I could pretend that I'm this mega Christian, right? You're a pastor, you're a professional Christian. Yeah, right. Don't be fake, people. Be real with others. Examine your heart today. What's funny about this is some of you are already sitting here thinking, you're probably thinking, I hope so-and-so's hearing this. I hope this person's hearing this. Are you hearing it? Your faith should be so real. Faith should be so real that other people notice you and say, wow, what's so different about them? We went and saw, I don't see them here today, but we went. Ben and I went and saw a couple of our kids play a basketball game the other night, Friday night. And I knew the coach who was on the opposing team. He coached for SV. I played basketball with his son at Davis. And so I went over to him, and his name is Mark Ward. I said, "Hey, Mark, how's it going?" I talked with him and his wife for about 15 minutes after the game. And he kind of asked, I said, "I'm sorry, I was cheering against you. We have some kids on the team who go to our youth group." And he said, "Oh, who goes to your youth group?" And I told him the names of the two or three kids, and he was like, "Really?" He's like, "Those kids were so composed out there. I could tell something was a little strange about those kids." Strange isn't a bad thing, people. Don't be fake. Your genuineness, if that's what you say, is noticed, whether you know it or not. First one is don't be fake. Second one is this: have some faith. The Bible doesn't say you have to have barrels and barrels and barrels of faith. Like I said, mustard seed. That's like if you were to take a pen and just make a point on a paper. That's about how big it is. But the thing with faith is, we feel like faith is this long journey, right? Like, I need to see God pull me through a financial struggle before I got good faith. Or I need to see God take me through this trial before I have big faith. Why does your faith have to be this huge journey? What, like, I used to think when I was a kid, like, my faith would grow, like, when I'm 50s and 60s, 70s, I'll have it all together. There's some of you here today who are in your 50s, 60s, and 70s, and are like, "Yeah, good luck." That's okay if you don't have it all together. You can still have faith even if your life isn't all perfect. But is your faith something that actually drives you to love other people like Jesus did? Or is it just something that you hold on to and you don't share with other people? Real genuine faith drives us to action. James, in the book of James, he says, faith without works is what? Dead. Real genuine faith moves us to love on other people. Real genuine faith moves the church to action, to do outreach, to invite our friends, to love on other people, to forgive other people when they've done things that we shouldn't forgive them for. But you know what? Because of my faith, I can. Have some faith. And some of you are here today with this thought. "Nate, I have faith, but I've prayed for things for 30 years. I prayed for things for even longer than that, and Jesus hasn't answered it. What are you supposed to say to my faith?" I'd say, don't give up. What do you want me to say? I'm not the God who creates when things happen and don't happen. I know the one who does, though. And I know what it's like to see those spiritual mountains move that I've prayed for over a decade. Let me tell you about this mountain. Ready? A friend of mine in high school, his name's Steve. I won't tell you his last name. No one here will know him. His name's Steve. Tore his ACL, 11th grade in high school. Completely took some terrible choices. Got addicted to drugs. We just went a terrible life down a trail in life. I prayed for him when I was started praying for him when I was 16 years old. And anytime I come across stuff on him on Facebook, I just pray, "God, save Steve. Please bring Steve to resurrection, like your faith and resurrecting faith." Last June, Steve got saved. That's a mountain that I said, "Yo, get in the ocean." And Jesus said, "Okay, it's time. It's time for Steve to get in the ocean. It's time for that mountain to be moved." Sometimes Jesus moves the mountains different in different timing than we want him to. Don't stop praying. Don't stop having faith. Believe in your heart that Jesus can and he will. He defeated death. None of us in here are dying and raising back to life on our own. The only way we can do it is through Jesus anyway. Don't be fake and have some faith. As we close, worship team, you can come. As we close, examine your hearts for me today, for yourself. For yourself, examine your hearts. Do you have genuine faith? Do you have faith that has fruit? Or are you the person that when Jesus gets close, he says, "Why is there no fruit on this tree?" I don't know about you, but I don't want to be someone that's cursed because Jesus looks at me and says, there's no fruit on your tree. I want Jesus, when I get to heaven and when I face my God and my Savior, I want him to say to me, well done, thou good and faithful servant. You lived it out. You did it. Examine your hearts today. Where are you at with your faith? I'd encourage you, if you're at a spot where you're on the edge, where you feel like you're fake, or you feel like there's something that's blocking you from having that real faith, talk to myself, talk to Pastor Ben, Pastor Brent, Rob, someone you're sitting close to. As we close our service with this song, examine your hearts today.